Welcome to Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online. I am Warren Shaw. He is the great Gary Washburn, and we're your host and resource for everything Boston Celtics this season. Gary, my dude, what's happening?
Hey, Warren, how's it going, man? Another average day in the sports world, I guess. Always something going on. So, yeah, everything's good.
Oh, man. Well, as you alluded to, we've got to kind of get to it, man. As we get ready to record today, this afternoon, news breaks that you would think doesn't really impact the Boston Celtics, but alas, news will impact the Boston Celtics. So we'll get into that here really quickly before we go to our break. And the crux of our conversation today will be kind of the Celtics defense and where some of the struggles are. But the Brooklyn Nets, they, I guess, part ways. I guess it was a mutually parting of the ways with Steve Nash, as reported by Shams and Woj and all those out there. And Sean Marks ends up having this great or kind of cryptic press conference. A lot of the conversation gears towards Kyrie, but part of the conversation, and Shams puts out there tweet-wise, that the Brooklyn Nets have received permission from the Boston Celtics to talk to Ime Udoka to be their next head coach. Jacques Vaughn will be the interim coach. But depending on who you believe, what you've heard already, you know, it could be something within the next 24 to 48 hours. It could be something, you know, just somewhere down the line. Gary, just what's your quick sense of what's been happening here? And is Udoka a legitimate candidate for this Brooklyn Nets job?
Well, Warren, yeah, of course, I definitely think he is. I think that he is someone that obviously they have ties with him, being a former assistant coach coming to Boston from Brooklyn on an assistant on that first year of Steve Nash's staff. And so, I do think he's a legitimate candidate. I don't think with all this upheaval, with parting ways with Steve Nash, they're going to announce it today or anything like that. But I do think the negotiations are going on. And what I've been told, the Celtics are ready to break ties. I mean, I don't think that barring any unforeseen circumstances, Udoka was going to coach the team again. It's been 5 weeks. I think they're very pleased with the training camp and now the first six-plus games that Joe Mazzulla has coached, that he can turn into a bright young coach. Obviously, he's going to make his mistakes and have his bumps in the road and have some things he needs to learn as a head coach. But I think that they're very pleased with the direction of the organization. And I think they're completely ready to move on from Ime Udoka. So I don't, I've been told the Celtics will give full clearance to any team that wants to bring him on as coach. And as you know, Warren, it's also about the dollar bills here. And that means that they don't have to pay Udoka for the rest of the year or the remainder of his contract. That's a financial relief for the ownership group that you're not paying a coach not to coach. So I think that they're ready to move on. I think that they've been ready for a while. I just think they wanted to give Mazzulla a chance to kind of get his feet, you know, wet and, you know, but settle in a little bit. They think they felt like he's done that. You know, obviously we're going to talk about the team in a minute and how they're doing. And I think, you know, 4-2 is not a bad record. It's not 0-6. They're not a mess at this point. They've gotten off to a pretty good start. You know, couple of losses in a row, but they were able to bounce back. But I do think Udoka is a definite candidate. I think it's a sign, Warren, that Sean Marks trying to save his job. You know, Sean Marks is kind of came in there with that San Antonio pedigree, obviously knowing Ime from those San Antonio days, and kind of was supposed to be the guy that pushed the Brooklyn Nets to the top, right? We would have thought, I'm sure you as well as I, that by now, all the personnel that had gone through that, that they would have at least been to an NBA Finals, right? They would have at least won maybe a championship with Durant. You know, remember that infamous the summer 19 where, you know, it was KD and Irving deciding to go to, you know, like, hey, get in another super team. And then here comes James Harden and all that. So I think they thought they'd be the next, you know, version of that Miami Heat of the early 2010s. Mm-hmm. And so it hasn't worked. Obviously, it's been an abject failure. There's a lot of drama going on in Brooklyn. There's always drama in Brooklyn. I think this is Sean Marks' ploy to save his job, save this organization from another complete rebuild. Because as you know, I mean, they tried to rebuild, or they tried to do this on the fly in 2013 by getting Garnett and Pierce. That didn't work. So they have to figure out what's next. And I think Sean Marks is really gasping at straws here. And I think Udoka is a good coach on the floor. I just think, considering what's gone on over the last 5 weeks, and his it's really hasn't had much time to settle. It's a tough situation that he's going to be coming into, and he's going to be getting a lot of questions, obviously, from the media about what's happened in Boston.
You know, you touched on a lot, and I want to be able to dive into, you know, different pieces of what you just kind of spoke about, especially with regards to, obviously, back to Udoka, but Mark's, you know, kind of grasping at straws. He indicates in the presser as well that he understands and recognizes, hey, they have a window. And that window is not as long. You have this quote-unquote collection of talent. You need to try to capitalize on it. I don't know that it was Nash's fault, but he clearly wasn't a part of the solution. And I think there's more wrong with that organization, you know, than just being the head coach or the lack of experience that he may have had. You know, it's weird coming off of the summer, you know, where Durant allegedly or did ask for him to be removed. And now, you know, whatever, 2-3 weeks in the season, that actually does come to fruition. And now Boston Celtics former head coach is now being considered into this. I want to ask you this point blank. Had this situation not presented itself, and it's not fact as we record, it's still, you know, hyperbole and a rumor, so to speak. But would Boston, do you think Boston was going to move on from Udoka officially before the year suspension, one way or another? And now this just gives them an opportunity to do that maybe a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I think that they were going to move on unless it was a complete train wreck with Mazzulla, which it isn't. And then even if it were, Warren, even if it didn't work out with Mazzulla, okay, let's say he's not ready, he's just kind of an assistant, maybe he's a couple years away, they could also decide to hire another coach other than Ime Udoka. It doesn't have to be Udoka or bust. So I think that they're pleased with the way now, obviously, just literally not even 10% into the season yet. Mm-hmm. So we're not at a point where you can make a real determination of how you Mazzulla's doing, but I think the organization was ready to move forward. I don't think there was very little chance after this whole thing that went down that Udoka was going to suddenly come back and take over as coach. And with the same people working in the organization, with, you know, just the same structure. The Celtics have a lot of longtime employees, have a lot of longtime people that work in the organization, at the arena, and all those. With this situation, I don't think it would have been conducive for Udoka to come back and say, hey, I'm back, you know, after a year and you know, and let's pick it up back up. And you've got the players need consistency, the organization needed consistency. And so I don't think, Warren, that he would have been back regardless of this job opening. I think the Celtics knew eventually that teams are going to start calling on him and doing their diligence and saying, hey, you mind telling us what's in that report? So we know that there's going to be nothing down the road. And, you know, this is a big risk for the Brooklyn Nets, Warren. I mean, you're hiring someone who, you know, in these times, right, these times of the Me Too movement and definite, you know, protection, which is much warranted, protection for women in the workplace, protection for their sanity, protection so they can work and not have to worry about some of these things that they've had to worry about, unfortunately, in previous years and generations and our parents' generation, where the women in those generations had to put up with so much sexism and overt, you know, just assault at times. It's a real risk to bring in someone, not who has a history, but someone who has been guilty of maybe some misdoings. And yeah. So I'm kind of wondering, and maybe we could talk about this and get your thoughts of, what about the women that work in the Nets organization? What does that say to them? What does this say to the employees there? Will Udoka, if he ever is the coach, be forced or be have to sign a, you know, an agreement, some type of you know, personal conduct policy kind of thing where, hey, one strike and you're out, not two strikes, not three strikes. Anything that we hear, you're gone. And I mean, what will be the conditions of his contract? I would think it'd be a lot stringent than a regular NBA coach. And how does he change? And how does he show people he's changed, literally, Warren, after 5 weeks? Like, that's the thing. I mean, we barely in November now. This happened late September. You know, like we haven't had a chance to turn the page. The season hasn't barely started. How in the world can he explain to the New York media, to the Brooklyn media, to the world, to the NBA community, hey, I'm a different guy. I made a mistake. In 5 weeks, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I think, Gary, it's a great question. I definitely want to dive into this. I think we're going to take our show maybe in a slightly different direction from most Celtics fans here, but this is an important conversation. Real life things are happening here or potentially happening here. And I definitely want to address it as it relates to the Boston Celtics team here. We'll take a quick break here from BetOnline, and we'll be right back here on Believe in Celtics. Basketball is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, BELIEVE, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. And we're back here on Believe in Celtics, presented by BetOnline. And, you know, before the break, Gary was speaking eloquently, you know, about what a potential, what it means to bring in a personality like Coach Udoka into your organization at this stage, still fresh, still very fresh in a lot of ways. And now to an organization that doesn't have a great overall organizational culture currently, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff happening in Brooklyn, and this quite frankly makes it weirder. Potentially, again, we're speaking with, you know, some of a certain level of uncertainty. Josh Primo situation just happened in San Antonio. Right. And we're just really, as you were speaking, Gary, just so much is happening, you know, to female employees within the sports space.
Or the assistant GM in Detroit. You know?
It's never ending. Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I can't speak what it means to be a person or a female in these types of situations, you know, male dominated organizations, and having to be put into these types of situations one way or another, or, you know, with people who have this level of history behind them, recent or otherwise. And it's a very fine line, I think, within our society. You know, we spoke, unfortunately, a little bit about Kanye last week and Jaylen Brown severing the ties there. You know, when have you paid your penance? When is enough for you to kind of move forward? And can you show what you've learned and to move forward as a positive individual? By the court of public opinion, and, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to what that is, it probably hasn't been enough time. But as we alluded to, Brooklyn's grasping at straws. And that's what I think is, you know, really, really interesting. I want to switch it back to the Celtics specific lens, because sure, there's a financial angle to this if he moves on, and that's fine for, you know, a growth spec and company to not have to deal with that. But what about the players? And do you think in some ways it can send, not necessarily a negative message, but has there been more clarity around his situation? I don't know if Udoka goes to Brooklyn, does the facts of what happened actually eventually come out? But do you feel the players understand the same thing that you said previous to this in our prior segment, that the Celtics were moving on from him? The 1 year suspension was just something they kind of put out there. There was no real intention of ever really bringing him back. Do they understand that? And would they, in essence, not necessarily bless, but just like, okay, fine, he's moved on. But to the Brooklyn Nets, who are, you know, division don't really matter that much anymore, but they're a kind of a rival. And there's a lot of symmetry what's been going on with Boston and Brooklyn for whatever reason, because of even the Kyrie stuff, you know, being on that team and going over there. There's just a lot of, again, weirdness between these two organizations. Do you think the players are going to be accepting of this if it were to come to pass, or they just don't have a choice, and, you know, but have they actually moved on?
Yeah, Warren, I think they're going to have to be. And I think, okay, like, we can try to, you know, break this down here. Like, okay, the question that I don't have the answer to is, have things been further explained about what happened and what the actions that Udoka did that forced the organization to make this move? Has further details been revealed? It's been to a point now, being around the team, that these questions aren't asked anymore. We've kind of, you know, the media's moved on. Hey, it's a new administration, new guy. The players have talked enough about it. But this is something that, you know, could obviously need to be brought up again. Secondly, Warren, like, have they talked to Udoka as a group? Has he called any of the players? Was he allowed to call any of the players? That's the thing about, I was told that, like, he's not going to be, he wasn't going to be able to come to a Celtic game. Like, you know, he wasn't going to be at the arena at all watching them play or anything like that. Like, he was going to stay away from the franchise. Okay. Now, could he have gone to other NBA games? Who knows? I don't think, you know, and I'm sure if we had, you know, look at TMZ or something, we could see, we would know that he made some type of public appearance, but I have not seen or heard of anything publicly he's done since this happened. But did he reach out to the players individually, maybe? And was he allowed to? And talk to them and say, hey, man, this is what happened. You know, go play hard for Coach Mazzulla. I made a mistake. Did those conversations happen? And I think that if it did, or they got some kind of explanation, you know, maybe a letter was written. Maybe he can't contact them directly. Maybe there was a letter, you know, something distributed on email or something to the players. Okay. If he explained himself, maybe they have more peace of mind about it and ready to move on. I do think they like Joe Mazzulla. I think they fully support him. I think there was a comfortable, very positive atmosphere around the team before all this happened. And then it's turning back into that now. It's a positive atmosphere. Because remember, Warren, all of his assistants are still there. Now, that's another question. I don't think he would, you know, take any of his assistants in the middle of the season. That would be a real unpopular move. And probably he's got to, you know, if he's getting the job, or as you know, he's probably got to, you know, compile a staff. And he's been in a couple of different places where he could get guys either who, I mean, and how do you get, you know, do you keep the current staff? Do you bring a couple of guys on? Do you let anybody go? Do you just jump in there with the current Steve Nash's staff, guys that you know, and just jump in there and work and say, hey, I'll worry about all that in the offseason. So did he have conversations? Are the players at ease and at peace of mind? Are they bothered by this? Are they asking what Grusbeck and Brad Stevens, so you didn't get nothing for this guy? You just let him go? You know, you didn't get a draft pick, you know, a second rounder? Like, I'm sure different players might feel different ways. I think the players are probably a little bit more flexible and more chameleons than we probably give them credit for. You know, and they go through their personal stuff too. So they've probably been through a lot of things and concerning the season, and Jaylen Brown's been through his personal stuff with the, like, so they're like, oh yeah, that's right, huh? Like, I mean, it was a month ago. So I think, Warren, some of the players probably feel differently. Some probably didn't want him back because of what he did. Others were probably like, hey, it'd have been nice, but I'm good now. You know, it's just like anything else. You get used to something, you get comfortable, but then you see something else and you say, well, yeah, you know, that was nice that, you know, what we were doing before, but I like this new thing too. So it all depends on whether the players have peace of mind. That we don't know. We don't know if the players, they've had to force themselves to have peace of mind, but were they explained further about the situation? Were they allowed to read the report? You know, or is there non-disclosures everywhere? I'm just wondering, Warren, what's Udoka going to say in that first press conference?
Man.
Is he going to explain anything?
Yeah.
Is he going to say, honestly, I didn't do anything wrong, but it was a mistake. It was a disagreement. I don't agree with what happened, but I accept. Like, who knows? Is he going to say, hey, it was, you know, I didn't feel like I did anything wrong. I feel like I made a mistake in judgment, but other than that, I feel like who knows what's going to be said? Who knows what he is going to reveal or what he can reveal? All this stuff, Warren, is so, it's been locked down. I mean, the NBA kind of said, okay, Boston, you know, handle your business. We have nothing to do with this.
Right.
It's not like the NBA had no input in this. You want to suspend him? He's your coach. He's under your contract. You do what you have to do. Now, will the NBA go to Brooklyn and go to the Nets and go to the Celtics and say, okay, guys, all the conditions of his suspension are no longer the case because he's no longer an organization. So now he can do whatever he wants to do. Or the Celtics, like, you still can't talk to our players. Like, who knows what is going on, you know, in terms of the three entities, the Nets, the Celtics, and the NBA. Because I was told today by someone, you know, that this is unprecedented. We've never dealt with this before. You know, like, we don't know what to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, the league wants to concentrate on damn basketball. They do not want to concentrate on Kyrie Irving's craziness, and they don't want to concentrate on this. They want the story to be on the damn basketball floor. But as we know, when we watch the games now, it's who's not playing. You know, that's the story. Who's sitting out? What coach is on the hot seat? And what person is doing things on social media? That's unfortunately the NBA that we're part of. So I think a long-winded answer, it all depends on whether individual players have made peace with themselves in terms of, like, you know what, I'm just not going to be able to find out. I'm just going to move on. You know, I think they were curious a month ago. Are they still curious? I'm sure they are. But I'm sure, like, listen, man, you know, and I'm sure they hear things. I'm sure there's been some whispers. And I'm sure those in the organization that might not have the high profile, but that work in that arena, work around that team, are probably like, hey, guys, this is what went down, you know. So I think that they're going to have to, like, go back. They're going to have to figure it out. But I think, you know, going to a division rival, seeing them four times a year, that'll be fascinating.
Man, this is layered. And again, the NBA continues to bring drama and in some ways now, unfortunately, permeates around Boston to some degree. You just hope that whatever happens with the Udoka situation, that the team is not impacted, because in some ways, like you said, you hope they've just kind of moved on. But I don't know if it becomes fresh, like you open up that wound again by virtue of his name being brought up and bantered about. I'm sure, you know, when they play Cleveland and then on to Chicago, Toronto, Memphis, Chicago, et cetera, the teams that they're going to be playing here in the next couple, like, these conversations are going to come up. And depending on how fast Brooklyn moves or don't move, I know Quinn Snyder's also been bantered about in this. So, you know, some of this could be for naught, but hopefully it doesn't become a distraction. They can move on. But if he is ultimately hired, you know, that's just going to be a pill that they'll have to swallow, as you alluded to. You're tuned in here to Believe in Celtics. I'm Warren Shaw. He's Gary Washburn. Make sure you're following him at G Washburn Globe on Twitter, and follow me at Shaw Sports NBA on Twitter. We're going to talk more Celtics, actual Celtics basketball here after the break on our Geno time. Thanks for sticking with us, man. Great episode so far, but we'll be right back. This week's edition of the Geno Time segment here on Believe in Celtics, we are going to be discussing the Boston Celtics defense. You know, as we talked a little bit about 4-2 as we record this show, Cleveland coming up, a rematch with Cleveland, you know, overtime game where they gave up 41 apiece to Donovan Mitchell and Caris LeVert. Celtics killer now, Caris LeVert, that's what I'm going to call him. But the defense just hasn't looked as spry, and it's something we talked a little bit about on the last episode, but it continues to be a point of concern. Offensive rating, fourth, hey, looking great, up from seventh last year, but second overall in terms of defensive rating last year, down to 25th this year. That math ain't mathing, Gary. There's a lot of things wrong, I think, with the Celtics defense, and I've really been seeing it, especially at the point of attack. You know, people are getting blown by on a more consistent basis, and they don't have the rim protection, the requisite rim protection there. But guys are hitting shots. You know what I mean? And, you know, there's no accounting sometimes for when Donovan Mitchell, I mean, he's an all NBA level talent. Caris LeVert, again, Celtics killer. So some guys, sometimes people get hot. But there's some things fundamentally wrong, I think, what's going on here. Marcus Smart is starting to allude to it and saying, hey, we need to get back to the defense that we were playing last year. But how do they do that? What have you seen? Why is the defense taking this much of a slip? You know, understanding that Mazzulla was essentially the defensive coordinator last year. So what has been different from this year, from last year to this year?
Yeah, Warren, I think they've just been slow to learn the concept, slow to kind of to get back into that rhythm. And I think that the NBA, you know, it's a league now where offenses, with all the foul calls and all the rules that kind of favor the offensive players, I call like the James, we're still in the James Harden era, you know, we're still in that era where, you know, there's a lot of fouls, a lot of free throws, a lot of three balls. So it used to be that if you, you know, allowed anything over 100 points, you were not a good defensive team. You had to allow in the 90s. Now, if you allow in the 90s or in the low hundreds, you're a great defensive team. And you got teams allowing 115, 116 points a game. That's like the 80s all over again, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think the Celtics have to get refamiliarized with Mazzulla's system, play a little bit harder, and not let, like, the offense affect the defense. Miss shots, putting your head down, complain to officials. If we look at it, like, the Philadelphia game, I thought they adjusted the opener. They had, you know, Harden went off 19 points in the first quarter, then he got to the free throw line 8 times, and then I think he individually finished with 12 free throws. So they made an adjustment there. They shut down Harden after the first quarter. He finished with like 35 points, but 17 in the final – or 16 in the final 3 quarters. So he didn't have that standard, you know, 50-point, you know, that we've seen James Harden put up in his over his years. And then, you know, Embiid had 26 and 15. Embiid had a nice game, but nothing you would say was a dominant performance. And so I thought that was a solid, you know, not a great defensive effort, a lot of 117. Some of those came in the final minute. The Miami game allowed 104, did a good job, held on, had a, you know, tough quarter, that third quarter, but I thought did a good job against the Heat most of the way. Orlando was a win and started to slip, where the Magic put up 120 points. The Magic was getting everything it wanted. You know, Banchero was getting to the bracket. Franz Wagner, but you know, they did enough to win, and they played a team that didn't know how to win, doesn't know how to win yet. That's when I started seeing the slippage. And then the Chicago game, I thought the second unit really let them down. And then that's when I'm getting back to the shooting. Like LaVine, and like if you look at the 3-point percentages now early in the season, there's some guys who are shooting like 58% for three, you know, early in the season, first 6-7 games, guys are literally hitting more than half their threes. But the four guys I wrote about, Io Dinamo, or I struggle. Husumo. I always struggle with his name. And Zach LaVine, those two guys, and against Cleveland, LeVert and Mitchell. Husumo and LaVine combined for 7 three-balls. Both of them are shooting in the mid-40s in threes early in the season. So Steph Curry territory, okay? Mm-hmm. But he does it for a whole damn season. And then Mitchell and LaVert combined for 11 threes in that overtime game, and both of them are shooting well over 40%, including LaVert, the Celtic killer, as you call him, shooting almost 49% from threes. So, as I look, they're not allowing a lot of three-point attempts, but they're allowing a high average.
Yeah.
So, if you're the Celtics, I think they're thinking, and we talked to Mazzulla about this, okay, like not good numbers so far, but some of these guys are going to start missing, and you're going to face shooters that aren't as good. They just happen to run in defensively to two back-to-back games where guys were literally on fire, okay, and they're starting the season hot. That's scouting, one, okay, DeSumo and LaVine are good three-point shooters. Don't don't go under the damn screen. And the same thing with Mitchell and LeVert. Both those guys shooting 45 plus don't go under the screen at this point. History will tell you, okay, it's going to lower to 36 eventually. But this isn't history right now. Mitchell is off to a great start.
Yes.
And LeVert kills you, period, when he plays the Celtics. Because as you saw, the next night against the Knicks, LeVert had 1 point. I mean, you know, something
very frustrating.
Yes. LeVert had 1 point on 0-for-9, I believe, against the Knicks. They still won the game. But, you know, LeVert shows up against Boston. So I think they feel like they're going to have to make adjustments and read the scouting reports a little bit deeper and also respect shooters a little bit more. But I think – and I think then we can flip to the Washington game. Bradley Beal, a guy who has had big nights against the Celtics before, not having a great season so far, averaging about 23 a game. Usually you're used to seeing Beal in the 30 range, 29, 30 range. But they got Porzingis, they got Kuzma, they've got some other weapons now, but he didn't score till late third quarter. And I thought that was he was frustrated. He couldn't get his shot off cleanly. He was just they played a very good defensive. That made the game. That determined the game. Other guys got off a little bit. Porzingis obviously affected the game with his size. Kuzma had his moments, but wasn't all that good. But and I was impressed with Hachimura. I thought Hachimura played well, but Beal was non-existent for the first three quarters. And that is how you win games. What happened? Allowed 94 points, exactly where you want to be. You're not going to average, not going to allow 94 per night, but those are the type of games that's a good defensive effort. So let's see, going toward the future, Warren, if they can continue that, because they shut down one of the game's top, top 10 scorers. You know, if you just throw out names, you know, the Giannis's and some of those guys that can put up the 30 points a game pretty on an easy basis. You know, Beal's in that category. He's a top 15, top 20 player at this point in his career. Still top, you know. So to hold him I think he had 16 points or something like that, but it was literally a lot in garbage time, a lot very meaningless points. Did not impact the game at all. And I think that's what you point to that moment and you say, okay, this is how we want to do it. Focus on the leading scorer. Make it hard on him. If other guys beat you and other nights, they are going to beat you. LeVert is going to – there's going to be nights that guys like him go for 41. Now, you might want to do a little bit more better defense and emphasis on it. But I think if you get more consistent, I think they'll be better.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think, again, a lot of it, as we all know, defense is an effort situation. And I think they obviously have the physical and requisite skills. They have the know-how. They just need to put it into application. And they'll continue to be tested here, you know, with this next stretch of games, as we alluded to, Cleveland again, you know, as we record. New York, is it? Chicago, Memphis coming out.
Chicago, New York, and then Memphis, obviously. John, those guys. So their schedule is not easy. They're not getting a bunch of, as my man down Sean, he say, tomato cans. So, you know, Chicago on Friday, then the Knicks back to back, a tough game with, you know, their new acquisitions. And then at Memphis, they're going to be ready too. So it should be interesting. It's an interesting stretch for the Celtics.
Yeah, right. So we want to see, you know, how it all kind of comes together, first of all. And, you know, the Celtics, from what I've seen, you correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't seen them do too much trapping. You know, a lot of it's just switching, you know. And do you think that's a mechanism or something that they could try to employ against some of the better and upper echelon talents in the NBA? Like Ja is on an MVP level. Donovan Mitchell, it looks like he's trying to have an MVP type of season right now. Do you think that is something that they would look to employ, even to test, to maybe have it in their back pocket for when the playoffs ultimately come? Or is it just like, hey, we're set in our defensive principles. We know we're going to switch. We believe in, you know, whoever gets switched on to whoever can handle that situation, maybe with some shaded and stunting of coverage, if you will. But I don't really see a whole lot of trapping on a regular basis. You know, correct me if I'm wrong there. But is that something that you think they could employ or should employ, or just kind of maybe save it for later on?
I think there's something they should employ, because I think if they did that against Donovan Mitchell, and got the ball out of his hands. Now, if you let LeVert, and LeVert's obviously not as much of a proven scorer. He's had his moments, and that I was there for that 52-point game he had when he was with Brooklyn at the Garden. But Mitchell's a guy that you know what he's bringing to the table. He's going to bring 27, 28 points, potentially 35, 40 on a night, given night. You know what he's going to do. I would have, I think, Mazzulla trapped to get the ball out of his hands. If Kevin Love beats you, if Okoro beats you, if Jared Allen beats you, even if Evan Mobley beats you, it's their night, okay. But to have two guys go for 41 points each is a real concern. Like, that's lackadaisical defense. So I think sometimes you got to make adjustments.
Yeah.
You know, I remember seeing our friend Kemba Walker drop 43 on the Celtics in Charlotte one night, where basically Kyrie was saying, like, we trap, like, we're the, you know, who doesn't trap a guy in that situation when he's just scorching hot?
Yeah.
You know, like, you just, it's just, you got to sometimes tip your cap and go, okay, this ain't the night to guard him one-on-one. You know, this isn't – he is making it hard on us. Let's make someone else beat – even if you replace – be getting beat with twos with three, you know, by – you know, instead of threes getting beat with twos, that's a little better than, you know, splashing. Mitchell just – you just knew it was his night, and you're like, okay, are they going to do something to stop him? Are they just going to hope he misses? Or are they going to put a bigger defender on him? So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see over the next couple of games. Obviously, another matchup with Cleveland.
Yep.
How they approach that matchup. And obviously, LeVert will be there too. But I think trapping's got to become part of their arsenal. There's just too many good, pure scorers in this league, Warren, to sometimes you got to know that there's going to be a guy that's going to light you up every now and then and force you to do that.
Yeah, I agree, obviously. So I'd love to see, again, just as – situationally, maybe, as again, to kind of stop runs, like how you'd call a timeout. All right, well, let's trap this MFR. He's giving us a business right now.
Yeah.
We got to give players like that different looks. And as you alluded to, you tip your cap and say, hey, God bless if other guys beat you. But yeah, when you have those main stars torching you like that, it's a little bit tough. So we don't want to end on a negative note. Again, this team is still 4-2. So that's, you know, they're above ground, right? Yeah. That's a positive situation. 3-point shooting has been phenomenal. I don't know how sustainable, but it's been pretty phenomenal. What are they? They are third in percentage and third in attempts, first in makes, shooting almost 41 threes a game. It's a lot of threes, Gary. that's a lot of threes, but they're going in. So talk to me a little bit about how sustainable you think this is. The looks that they're getting offensively and the confidence that Mazzulla's allowing them to play, that kind of free-flowing. But as I said on the last show, offense can be intoxicating. And I don't know if that's why we're not seeing, you know, the level of defense that we're used to, but the three-point shooting has been a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, Warren, I think the problem maybe in some of their ruts is they're chasing too many threes. Too many three pull-up, you know, like Marcus, the early shot clock threes with Marcus Smart, you know. Marcus, you know, don't do that, you know. When Marcus takes a lot of threes, you know the offense is not going as well as they'd probably like. I think that this is where Robert Williams comes in when he comes back, where they can penetrate, dish, and kick. But with Robert there, you can just lob it for an easy dunk, because if the defense is playing out to the threes, it opens up the floor, and there's Robert, just, you know, easy 2 points. Now they don't have someone that's going to give them an easy two. You know what I'm saying? Robert, the element he brings is he gives your team a chance to get an easy 2 points. It's like if you look at Jared Allen, not as much as with Jared Allen, but how easy it is when you throw it all to a big guy and he's, I'll just dunk on you, right? You know, try to get up. And so I think that's the element they're missing with Robert, and they don't have, you know, you're not going to do that with Al as much as lobs and things like that. So I think they're relying on the three ball, and I think that they've worked on it too. Jalen's worked on it. Jason's worked on it. You know, Marcus is always working, although it doesn't always go in for Marcus. I see him in practice on a daily basis trying to get that damn shot down. And then you got better shooters. Sam Hauser is a better shooter now. Pritchard's improved. Grant Williams has improved. So you got some good shooters on that team. You know, Derek White's a guy, Brogdon. So you don't have anyone, and even Smart, you would say, is an average three-point shooter, but streaky, right? You would definitely put the streaky tag on him. We've seen Marcus really light it up, and we've seen him really not light it up. But if you look at the roster, you have with White improving, I think that's a big deal, with Brogdon being a good three-point shooter and Hauser. So you've added Brogdon and Hauser with two good shooters that you didn't have last year, and then White shooting with more confidence. So that's almost like three extra guys, because you didn't really trust Derek White last year from the three-point line. It just wasn't working. Now he's shooting with more confidence. So I think you can rely for now, but I definitely think they will eagerly anticipate Robert Williams returning to open up the floor. And hey, oh, you're going to guard me from three? I'll drive. Two guys collapse on Tatum. Oh, I'll just flip it up. There's the big guy. Bam. Easy points. Free throws and two-point and dunks and lobs. That's what you need. You can't win this in this league just by shooting three. So if you're the Celtic fan, hopefully Robert Williams comes back soon, but they make it a little bit easier on themselves. Get to the free throw line too. When they're in the bonus, attack the rim. Stop taking threes when you got a team on the ropes in the bonus. Live at the line. So there's some little things that could be tweaked, but I think for a team, if you'd asked 4-2, I think people would be like, yeah, I'll take that. Like, I don't think people thought – I think they thought maybe they might lose at Miami,
right?
Or maybe lose the opener against Philadelphia, or maybe at Chicago. The Cleveland game's a little bit – Cleveland's playing good ball. Cleveland might be a year ahead of what we thought they were. So I think people would take 4-2 for now. And, you try to get through that schedule, and then you get a couple of Detroits in there, and then you can start building up some wins.
Yeah, and I think it's great to be able to kind of, sharpen your iron here against some of these upper echelon talent, even without being fully healthy. Look what Milwaukee's doing without Chris Middleton right now, and, they're still achieving. So, again, Boston's still playing good basketball here, but some things to tighten up, and better days to come as a result, of some of the injuries, getting shored up here. Hopefully Rob joins us at some point, maybe January, February, into the season. So I think that's a great place to wrap it up, G Money. I think this has been one hell of an episode yet again. I want to thank you for your always great musings, your coverage and your insight. He is Gary Washburn. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at GWashburnGlow. Follow me at ShawSportsNBA. And this has been Believe in Celtics, presented by Bet Online. We will definitely catch y'all next week. Peace out.